On the eve of the general election, Dispatches investigates the state of the NHS, an issue that repeatedly polls as being one of the key concerns for voters. For the last 3 months, a Dispatches reporter has been working undercover in the A&E department of the Royal Shrewsbury Hospital. An A&E where in the winter of 2022, deaths hit three times the national average.
Can I have some help, please? A patient has collapsed on a chair.
Where overcrowding means patients are offloaded in corridors.
The nurse, when I get hand over, they just leave the notes.
Is that dangerous?
It is, but it happens all the time.
Where vulnerable patients are left neglected and suffering.
I was out there for 2 days. 2 days.
The quality of care is massively eroded. It's clearly unacceptable.
And where falling care standards jeopardise basic human dignity.
People are having to go to the toilet in public.
I am so angry right now.
I don't think this is unique to this hospital by any stretch of the imagination.
However bad you think it is, it's worse.
This film is a stark warning to whichever political party comes into power in just a matter of days.
Undercover A&E, NHS in crisis, hashtag C4 Dispatches. A young white man in a light green short-sleeved shirt.
After 10 days of training...
This is my uniform.
Our undercover reporter, Robbie Boyd, is ready for the first shift as a trainee healthcare assistant, known as an HCA.
Definitely feeling nervous.
Oh my God, I feel good. How are you guys?
The Royal Shrewsbury A&E is one of the most challenged in the NHS. It's overcrowded, there are long delays, and the health regulator, the Care Quality Commission, recently demanded action to stop patients being put at risk. Robbie's soon working in one of the busiest areas.
Are you happy to sit?
It's known as fit to sit, where people who are sick and in pain, but for whom there are no beds, are left to spend hours in chairs.
I've been here, I don't know, about 15 hours, since 3 o'clock yesterday. I can't sit here much longer, I'm in pain. I've been here for 5 hours and not seen a single person.
Okay, how long have you been here?
7 hours.
7 hours, 8 in the morning. You're waiting on blood test results. Walking through a ward.
Robbie discovers that the long waiting times can have potentially life-threatening consequences. As they start their shift, Robbie and a colleague discover a woman who says she's waited almost 24 hours.
Sorry to disturb you. Can I take your blood pressure? Do they know when the doctor's going to be around?
She's a suspected stroke patient who should have urgent care. Robbie rushes to call the doctors in the medical team to find out what's happening.
Hi there, this is Fit to Sit. I'm one of the HCAs. I've been asked to call you because we've had a lady with suspected stroke. She's been sat now for 24 hours in Fit to Sit. We're wondering if you could send someone down. She's not.
They say they don't know anything about her. She hasn't been referred to them.
I've got some bad news.
What?
She's not been referred to medics. We have a patient who's been here for 24 hours. She's had a suspected stroke. They're like, she's not on our list.
Light from a projector. Then stroke consultant Dr. Sanjeev Nayak watching Robbie's secretly filmed footage. He looks away from the screen open-mouthed.
I don't have any words to express. It looks like chaos to me there. It just looks like chaos. I'm sorry to say it's unacceptable. 24 hours is too long for a stroke patient. The stroke patient should be seen immediately, I would say, and they should be having a scan within an hour and then referred straight on to the medical team for either thrombolysis or what, you know, the treatment they would think which is most appropriate for the stroke patient.
They say that she's not on their board and not on their list.
Yeah. What happened to the bloody list? It's pissing around. It irritates me immensely, it does.
This patient, depending on the severity of stroke, may suffer a severe disability which will take away his rest of his life. He may be dependent on people, he may be dependent on care, or in the worst case scenario, not live very long.
In the hospital, Robbie tells the patient, "We've escalated it with the nurse in charge. They will see you shortly," and she replies, "Okay." Moving with Robbie as he follows another man in a light green shirt past a nurse's desk and admin area.
As a trainee HCA, Robbie will be shadowing qualified healthcare assistants, learning to help the nurses, and should not be left alone with patients for extended periods. But the A&E department has more patients than it can deal with, and staff are often overwhelmed.
Can you cover what's her name? One of the nurses in the X-ray corridor.
A few shifts in, and Robbie is sent to help a nurse caring for five ill patients in a corridor that's become a makeshift ward. Patients regularly spend 12 hours or more on trolleys in this corridor.
Just so you know, it's my third week.
Okay, it's my second week here, so me and you are all in the same
boat. We're in the same boat.
Yes.
Robbie immediately discovers that on the corridor, even the most basic care tasks can be compromised, such as blood pressure checks and heart monitoring.
There's not enough plug sockets in the corridor. There's not enough equipment. There's no gloves. There's no sink. We can't wash our hands.
We have some wipes. We have things to wipe our hands. Where is it?
You're blocked off from the rest of the department, so it just means that there's no nurses or doctors walking through that area, and it means that the patients kind of get a little bit forgotten about.
A patient huddled on a trolley.
One of the patients is clearly in distress and in need of urgent pain relief.
Sorry.
Oh, God.
Robbie steps back from the trolley.
The nurse leaves to find pain relief. And so I was then left on my own with not only this woman, but also four other patients.
Oh, God.
So Robbie, a trainee healthcare assistant, is left alone to care for the patients, something which should never happen.
I had a patient in agony screaming. I had no idea when pain relief was coming. I didn't know what to do.
I can't cope with this. I can't cope with it.
Well, you're doing really, really well. They're getting you pain relief. I'm so sorry.
Robbie is concerned about the woman's prolonged agony and goes in search of help.
Can you help us? This woman is in agony.
Where's the nurse?
Where's the nurse? She went to get the medication. I don't know where she is. 2 secs. I've just got to find out where this patient is going to.
Okay, I've got the lead nurse coming.
But no one comes to help. In all, it's 20 minutes before the nurse returns with pain relief.
The patient says, give it to me, please, please. The nurse tells Robbie, I told you to stay with the patient because there was a lot of things I was up to.
Because there's a lot of things I was up to.
I've literally left for 1 minute.
Walking away along the crowded corridor, Robbie says, I could literally cry. Professor Alf Collins of the Patients Association shakes his head as he watches footage from Robbie's perspective, showing him standing helplessly over the agonized patient.
It's dreadful. It's clearly unacceptable. It's a basic requirement, isn't it? If we go into A&E and we're in pain, it would be really good to have our pain managed. That's an example that the quality of care is really massively eroded.
Dr. Adrian Boyle, president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine.
That poor woman in that pain, it's really upsetting. What we've seen here, there's a whole series of examples which show what happens when you don't have enough capacity in the whole system to look after people properly. You get people in the wrong place, receiving less good care, receiving undignified care. Our system urgently needs to increase the amount of capacity, both in space and staff, so that we can actually begin to look after our patients properly.
It's the job of A&E to stabilise patients so they can be treated elsewhere in the hospital or discharged. Any delays in assessing and stabilising patients puts them at risk.
walking up to an ambulance as its rear door opens.
Hello, you can come to Area 4.
Our undercover reporter, Robbie, often works in the ambulance receiving area.
Are you able to get your weight on your feet?
Even in early summer, A&E is so overcrowded, patients routinely spend hours waiting in ambulances.
Did you have to stay in the ambulance for very long?
2 hours.
How long were you in the ambulance for?
From 2 o'clock until 5 o'clock.
Did you have to wait long?
About 4.5 hours. We came in on one ambulance and then they went off shift, so we transferred to another ambulance. They transferred you between ambulances. A nurse at a desk says, "We're meant to take handover within 15 minutes, but it's never that. I've had it before now where I've had 10 outside waiting to come in."
10 ambulances waiting to come in. Does that, like, put the patients at risk?
Yeah, it can do.
Yeah, it can do. Dr. Boyle watches the conversation about switching ambulances.
It's a huge problem. You've got to look at this as a whole system. And fundamentally, the problem is that we don't have enough hospital beds and we don't use our hospital beds efficiently. So the end result of that is our hospitals are too full. Most of our hospitals this year have been running at occupancy levels of over 94%. And that trickles down and causes problems for the emergency departments and the ambulance service.
Once in the receiving area, patients are meant to be quickly moved on. But the A&E department and the hospital itself often don't have any spare beds. So the ambulance receiving area becomes another makeshift ward.
The idea is they'll be
in here for 20 minutes, have bloods, ECG, OBS, straight into A&E. That's how it should work. But unfortunately, it's like block, patient comes in, block, hours later, moves, another patient comes in. The idea is that it's quick.
Right, but we've had them for 6 hours this morning.
Some ambulance services limit how long crews will wait with a patient. After that, they drop and go, leaving the patient with the A&E staff, no matter how busy they are.
They've rapid offloaded this one by the sink. They just put them anywhere. It's really unsafe.
Staff are concerned that these rapid handovers can put patients at risk.
The nurse will not get a handover. They just leave the notes. Is that dangerous for the patient? Yes, but it happens all the time. If you were a patient or a prime minister and I put you there, do you like it? No. You see the point? It's not appropriate.
You see the point? It's not appropriate.
This is now a fifth or sixth staff member that has told me that it's dangerous, that it's undignified.
They should stop it.
They should stop it. You know why they still keep doing it? Because nothing happened at the moment. They're just only waiting. Robbie asks for something to go wrong.
They're just only waiting
for something to go wrong.
Dr. Nayak watches the footage and raises his eyebrows.
I don't know really what to say. I'm really shocked to see this footage. It's something I've not heard myself, patients being just dropped in and just going without a handover. But that's true. It's really concerning. It impacts patient safety. If somebody has been dropped off without a proper handover, then it's a real concern. It's not just a breach of protocol, it's negligence.
Undercover A&D, NHS in crisis.
The number of patients going to A&E is at its highest on record in England, with almost 1.5 million attendances in May alone. In recent years, growing numbers of hospitals have installed fit-to-sit areas in an attempt to reduce pressure on beds.
Fit-to-sit is one of the biggest areas in the department. We can have up to 20 patients in this area, and it's basically patients who can walk around and are fit to sit generally. Have a seat there for me, OK?
The national target is to get seen by a doctor and transferred onto a ward or discharged within 4 hours. But the patients in fit to sit that Robbie speaks to are experiencing waiting times far in excess of that.
Do you know how much longer I have to wait? I've been here 14 and a half hours.
Which means their medical conditions are not being treated and are at risk of worsening. Latest NHS England figures show that 60% of patients at Shrewsbury and Telford Hospitals Trust wait longer than the four-hour target. This is made clear to Robbie and the other trainees at their induction.
A nurse says the first doctor should see them within the first hour of arriving. This doesn't happen, unfortunately. This would be in fantasy hospital of my dreams.
All patients in A&E could be either admitted or sent home within 3.5 hours of being in the department. And any patient that exceeds 4 hours is defined as a breach. So you will hear, we all take the mickey, all the nurses go, oh my God, the patient's gonna breach.
In a crowded waiting area, a patient asks, how long do you have to wait? I got told 7 hours last night, been here 23. A nurse checks the form and says, 29 hours in fit to sit before anything's happened for her. That's disgusting care.
Robbie quizzes a senior member of staff about why waiting times are so excessive across the department.
Are we trying to get them through in under 4 hours? And these people, bloody hell, like 40 hours, 35 hours. Is that normal?
Yeah, at the moment it is.
Really? Why?
There's just no movement in the hospital. There's loads of patients that are bed blocking, so they all get stuck in A&E. It's not really an A&E problem, it's the rest.
It's the rest, okay.
I was out there for 2 days, I think. You were in fit to sit for 2 days. Yeah, 2 days. In a chair, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So longest waiting, 46 hours is the longest one. It's meant to be 4 hours.
But these people have been in 46.
Yeah, so we're not hitting any targets. I'd say we have at least like 40 breaches a day.
Many of the patients waiting in fit to sit for hour upon hour can be seriously ill people.
Hang on, we've got a lady fitting. Can I have some help, please? Get her onto the floor and onto her side.
Onto her side.
The risk is that the longer patients wait, the more their conditions can deteriorate.
Can I have oxygen, please? Oxygen. Can you get a trolley from somewhere, please? I can't. Sorry, I can't whilst holding her head. A medic asks the patient on the floor, can you open your eyes? That's right, you're okay. You just had a fit.
A Freedom of Information request to NHS England by dispatchers found nearly 400,000 patients in England spent more than 24 hours in A&E in the last 12 months. This is a 5% increase on the previous year.
Hopefully it won't be too long to get her off of this one and onto an actual.
A patient's companion says, oh well, before it was 30 hours in a chair, 30 hours up there. Robbie asks, fit to sit? The man continues, I think that's disgraceful, 30 hours just in a chair. It wasn't even a comfortable chair, really.
It's not good.
Professor Alf Collins from the Patients Association watches footage of the anonymised patient in her hospital bed.
It's dreadful. People waiting just far, far too long. This is almost becoming acceptable now. It's almost becoming the standard of care that people expect. Sad to say, I don't think this is exceptional.
Siva Anandasiva, chief analyst at the King's Fund.
That could be any one of a number of hospitals up and down the country, which is absolutely staggering. You know, there's not a single NHS hospital that's meeting the standard for how long patients should wait within 4 hours. That's how bad things have gotten. To be honest, the clip is scary. In major departments in this country, you're lucky if two-thirds of people are seen within 4 hours. That's how far and how quickly we've fallen.
Dr. Boyle.
Spending 2 days in an emergency department is, you know, it's worse than spending 2 days in an airport lounge. These are people who are sitting on an uncomfortable seat where the lights never go off, there's constant noise, there's constant stress, there's no clear end in sight. People will miss their routine medications. They'll be next to people who can infect them with other diseases. You know, it's just not acceptable. We know that if somebody stays more than 8 to 12 hours, that's harmful. And for every 72 people who spend more than 8 to 12 hours, there's one additional death. There were upwards of 250 excess deaths each week last year.
Fit to sit is just fit to shit. It's on a whole new level, isn't it, to be fair, this place?
To be fair, this place.
The Royal Shrewsbury Hospital may be a challenging example of falling care standards, but national statistics show it is a problem across the country. In the NHS in Scotland, A&Es perform slightly better than England and Wales, but they're still under severe pressure.
Selena Buddy with a photo album.
Tony was just such good fun. Hands-on dad. The king of the barbecue. He loved his family. If anybody ever had a problem, it's always Tony that sorted everybody's problems out. On June the 25th, Tony took really ill. I just knew looking at him that there was something serious wrong. Tony was taken to Glasgow Royal. When we arrived, his stroke was actually missed because he wasn't presenting all the normal symptoms. Even although myself, my daughter, did keep saying Tony thought he'd had a stroke.
Although the stroke was initially missed by the triage nurse, he had been admitted to Glasgow Royal under a category, which means he should have been seen by someone more senior within an hour.
You have to then ask yourself, if he had been seen by somebody more senior, would they have picked it up? But he wasn't.
Instead, he was put in a corridor for more than 5 hours.
It was as if we were invisible. Tony was freezing cold. They had no blankets at all. You're sat there in amongst a sea of people who need help and you're literally just a number.
Ambulance is queued outside.
Just after 10:30, Tony woke up in real distress. I heard my daughter Anthea screaming and I turned round and I could see Tony having a full-blown stroke. The very thing that he thought he'd been having and he was told, no, he wasn't.
All that time, Tony had not seen a doctor. Only now did one arrive.
I don't think Patch ever said this before, but he was scared and he didn't want his daughter to see him having a stroke.
Eventually, Tony was operated on, but it was too late.
He was holding my hand and then he took another turn. His eyes just rolled back in his head. And at that point, I knew that Tony had died.
Greater Glasgow and Clyde NHS say they have expressed their deepest sympathies to Tony's family and have apologised to them. They say they've made improvements.
How could this have happened after lying in a hospital all that time? He slipped through the net. He slipped through the net with the holes that are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's no safety net anymore. There's no such thing.
Undercover A&E, NHS in crisis. Undercover A&E, NHS in crisis. Hashtag C4 dispatches. Secret filming.
Oh joy, I'm back. Four observations, please.
Back in Shropshire, at the Royal Shrewsbury, Robbie is finding more evidence of declining standards of care. Working in Fit to Sit, Robbie hears a cry for help from a side room across the corridor.
Is somebody there who can help me?
A dementia patient has been moved to a side room because he has diarrhea and vomiting. Another patient points out he shouldn't be on his own.
Do they realise he's got dementia and been on his own with a cannula?
I think I'll go.
Left unsupervised, he's pulled out the cannula tube, which allows for the quick injection of medicine into the bloodstream.
So I walk into his side room and he looks really terrified. His gown's covered in blood, his sheet's covered in blood, the floor is covered in blood, and he's sort of still bleeding from the wound.
Why did you take your cannula out? Maybe we can get the chair. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. What do you think?
What would happen if there's an emergency? Should he have been on his own? So I go and check with a healthcare assistant what our protocol is for looking after patients with dementia.
If a dementia patient has diarrhea and vomiting or something and needs to be isolated, are you supposed to keep an eye on them? And you're supposed to be in the room with them and keep an eye, not leave them on their own.
Dementia patients don't have capacity, and so they might fall, they might rip out their cannula, they might harm themselves in another way, they might wander off, and we need to be watching over them to ensure that whilst they're under our duty of care, they're safe.
Keep coming.
Should we go there?
Yeah, that's where we're sitting, in the green chair.
Just be careful.
A nurse helps the patient towards a chair. Morning sunlight over the hospital.
At a morning meeting, staff are read a warning from a senior manager about care standards in the department.
Basic nursing care standards have fallen significantly. There's been a number of official and unofficial complaints from both patients, families and the wider trust staff around it. People have been found to be wearing incontinence pads but are able to ask and to be taken to the toilet, and have been told by both trained and untrained people to just do it in the pad. Patients on oxygen have not been monitored appropriately. Patients being left in a state of partial undress and no urgency from staff to address the issue. End-of-life patients not having appropriate observation. A patient was found deceased in a cubicle wearing an oxygen mask and evidence of vomit around their mouth. All of these are unacceptable and the standards must improve.
Gliding over ambulance bays.
During the months working there, Robbie documents a catalogue of examples of deeply worrying standards of care.
Certain things were being missed or just going under the radar. Notes always seemed to be going missing.
We can't find her notes. Notes aren't here.
I'll have a look.
In busy periods, medications are being missed.
Are you guys okay?
No. I haven't had a paracetamol since 12 o'clock.
And patients are going without eating for hours on end.
Have they come round with dinner today?
Nothing's been at all. We haven't eaten anything all day.
That's why we're starving.
It's so busy, you're being asked to do a million things, you're being pulled in every direction. Nurses are getting 15 requests a minute and you cannot keep up. Requests just slip through the cracks. Patients slip through the cracks.
We just need to move the aviary in a bit.
During Robbie's training, it was emphasised time and again how important it was to move elderly patients using plastic slide sheets to stop damage to their skin.
Right, off we go.
Robbie rarely sees it happen.
The coordinating nurse, two other nurses and a healthcare assistant sort of grabbed the white sheet underneath this patient, yanked him down the bed, and his body sort of slumped over.
That's it, I'll do it.
It's exactly what we've been told not to do, and they all did it. It just felt very slapdash.
When the same thing happens again, Robbie decides to challenge the staff member.
Are we supposed to use slide sheets? The healthcare assistant replies, yes, you can do. It just takes a lot of time. You'll notice a lot of things, that we don't really have the time or the resources to do it the way that you're supposed to. Robbie washes his hands at a basin.
Perhaps the most concerning drop in A&E standards is the failure to carry out timely observations, for example, of a patient's heart rate.
A nurse at a desk says, as a department, we currently only complete observations on time for 60% of our patients.
The problem is most acute in the fit-to-sit area.
Not to freak you guys out, but you are way behind on ours.
We're not.
We know, but we can't keep up.
We're doing obs every 2 hours.
We're doing obs every 2 hours. It's not sustainable when you've got 30 people. Even if you went round everybody, you'd still run out of time before you got back to the first person.
Oh, yeah. I'd find that in here. Absolutely.
So they're already setting up to fail.
It is not sustainable.
Siva Anandasiva from the King's Fund.
Observations are one of these really basic features of healthcare, whether you're getting enough oxygen in your bloodstream, what your pulse and heart rhythm look like. These are the sorts of things you need to know if you're going to manage patient care effectively and minimize risk. Because if you're not doing them, you don't know. You don't know if a patient is deteriorating, particularly in an overcrowded department where you can't physically see all the patients, they're not in front of you. That's just risk building up.
Dispatches has discovered that in the last 12 months, coroners in England and Wales have issued 60 prevention of future death reports linked to failings in emergency care, double the figure for the previous year.
Solihull, Birmingham, floating over a street of semi-detached houses.
One of them dealt with the case of Tracy Farndon at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham.
Where are you?
I was very close with my mum.
Where's the sign?
There was just this great energy about her that she would just make everyone laugh and feel happy.
You got your pretty dress on.
Jessamina.
Mum was 56. She was fit and healthy. Over the course of 3 days, she had sickness. She started to feel pain in her body, and at that point, her partner drove her to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. They were understaffed that evening. Over the course of 5 hours, there was no observations carried out.
A street lamp outside the Birmingham Hospital at night.
She was crying, screaming in pain, and Mum's partner was literally trying to flag down anyone. He was desperate. He felt like he wasn't being listened to, he wasn't being heard. He even started to watch the monitor himself. Oxygen levels have dropped to 83. He's going on Google. Is this okay? Is this normal? This is now 6 hours. This is the first point that she is reviewed by a doctor. He was shocked that he had received her in such a condition, and at that point she was transferred to resus. I made my way there and was literally walking across the hospital car park, and I get the call from a nurse to say, you know, you need to get here now. So I'm literally running through the car park to reach her, and I'm being told that you can't go in, she's being resuscitated. And I'm like, what? I just spoke to her last night, and now you're telling me she's in cardiac arrest. When they did call me in, it wasn't because there was any activity, it was just to demonstrate that we're stopping CPR now.
She looks down, fighting back tears.
I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. And I didn't understand what was going on. It didn't make sense. She died from septic shock. With sepsis, every minute counts. It's tragic to lose your mom, your best friend, your everything. And then on top of that, to know that she died from something that was treatable, and that she could have been saved, it makes things a million times harder.
Mommy's birthday!
Yeah.
And you got your little dress on. Oh, your mummy.
University Hospitals Birmingham told dispatches they offered their deep condolences, adding they're working with their emergency teams to improve the services they provide for patients.
They failed her, and this happened because they didn't do what they were supposed to do.
A photo of Tracy and Jess smiling. Undercover A&E, NHS in crisis. Undercover A&E, NHS in crisis.
At the Royal Shrewsbury, the A&E department is getting ready for a walk-around inspection by the Hospital Trust's infection control team.
How are you? Stressed? Oh, why? There's an inspection.
Oh, there's an inspection today. Ah, okay.
I don't know what you guys have to do or if it's just us, but we have to clean everything that's supposed to get cleaned but doesn't get cleaned.
Last year, there was a spike in cases of the superbug C. difficile. The hospital has brought down the numbers, though it remains a threat. On multiple occasions, staff tell Robbie that hygiene standards are poor.
A nurse says, have you experienced when you look at it, the commode is dirty. People leave them directly. Yeah, they always do it. If they're doing it all the time, so what's the cause of it then? Spread of infection.
If they're doing it all the time, so what is the cause of it then?
Right.
Spread of
infection.
Yeah.
Robbie scrubs a commode.
Robbie notices many examples of poor infection control standards.
Oh, it is dirty.
In particular, around how staff clean commodes.
So I walk into the sluice, which is kind of like a utility room. And it's a really high infection area because this is where all the patient's urine and feces will get washed away. I see dirty commodes that haven't been cleaned. There's no labelling to say when they've been cleaned.
Urine and hair.
There was visible feces and urine still on them and they'd just been left.
Robbie witnesses another way infections can spread while cleaning beds with another member of staff.
He's put on gloves to clean down the dirty bed, then moves immediately over to the next patient wearing the same gloves and asks him if he needs anything.
You okay?
Fresh water. He takes his water bottle, touches the top of his water bottle, wearing the gloves still, and at that point I said, do you think maybe we need to take our gloves off?
Shall we maybe,
Because we've just gone straight from one patient to another, and we're touching something he's about to drink from.
What were you going
to ask? I was going to say, should we take off the gloves before we fill out the water?
And he says to me, oh yeah, good spot. Which is pretty alarming.
In a staff room,
Robbie talks to a staff member whose job it is to help ensure the department is kept clean.
I was speaking to one of the other housekeepers. She was saying there's supposed to be three of you on it.
Yes, there is.
There's only you?
Yes, there is.
That's horrible.
Tell me about it.
What does that mean? Like,
it means you don't get everything done that you're supposed to do. You just
clean
have to
it.
Basics.
Right.
It's not good.
Dr. Adrian Boyle from the Royal College of Emergency Medicine.
So that actually I find quite upsetting because actually that's quite a lot of these things, problems are actually avoidable. And actually employing the right number of cleaners, following the infection control procedures, particularly since we've all just been through a pandemic, should be second nature.
Patients sitting in a waiting area.
Poor infection control exposes vulnerable patients to a potentially lethal environment.
A patient's companion says he's had his chemo in the last few days. The man adds, I shouldn't really be near anybody. He's immunosuppressed.
Let me ask if they've got a spike. I doubt it, but I will ask for you. Do we have any side rooms free? There's a guy who's just had chemo that's in there, that's pretty anxious. I've asked about a side room and they're going to have a look, but it's very busy at the moment. I'm really sorry.
Dr. Boyle watches the footage.
I'm anxious about seeing that because I think it will discourage somebody who becomes ill from seeking care. People need to know that when they go to the hospital and they are vulnerable to infection, that they will be looked after appropriately. So I'm anxious about that. Discouraging people who need to seek care, not seeking care.
Robbie's back working in the corridor.
Hello. What's wrong?
What's wrong? It's just, I'm so glad to speak to somebody. Oh no, why? Because I think I'm in danger of being forgotten here, and I don't know really what's happening. I don't think people know what I'm here for.
Robbie has found the care he's been able to offer patients over the last 3 months has been both rewarding and challenging.
Hello. All right?
Needs to the toilet.
Okay, we've got somebody in there at the moment that we're dealing with. Can I come and are you going to be able to hold for a minute? That's okay. Yeah, that's fine. We'll sort it out. Yeah, he's in the same position. I'll be back in 1 minute. Sorry about that.
Of the failings Robbie has documented while working in the Royal Shrewsbury A&E department, perhaps the most upsetting is the erosion of human dignity.
Yeah. You want to go to the toilet? Yeah, then I think it's easier to do a...
Robbie fetches a urine bottle for the man and later reflects on the incident in his video diary.
It's not right that there's a lack of privacy and having trolleys in the corridor, you know, it doesn't really bode well for patient morale.
On his bed in the corridor, the patient pulls up his gown to use the bottle.
I was so angry because this man, this poor man, was out in the middle of the corridor having to strip naked and go for a wee in front of all of the other patients, all of the nurses, all of the visitors and people's family. He was completely exposed to all of them whilst he did a pee. And it was awful.
I'm really sorry that you're in the corridor. Let me get a screen.
We've got people having to go to the toilet in public in the corridor. It's not okay. If that was my family member, I'd be fuming.
Family member, I'd be fuming.
I am so angry right now because of that.
Robbie buries his face in his hands.
If that was my parent having to pee in a bottle naked in front of 30 people, it's so undignified. And they're trying to be so sweet and they don't want to be a bother. Everyone's like, I'm being such a nuisance. I'm like, no, you're so unwell. You should not be the one apologising.
Professor Alf Collins of the Patients Association has tears in his eyes while he watches the footage and swallows.
How can you not be moved by witnessing that man in enormous distress, profoundly ill, having to pass urine in a corridor? The very most basic standard of care that we should be delivering is not being delivered. It's clearly unacceptable that people should be cared for in corridors. Clearly unacceptable.
Dr. Boyle watches the patient convulsed with pain on a trolley.
The things we've seen here today are clearly not just confined to winter. There is a year-round crisis in emergency care. The next government needs to urgently tackle this. They need to increase the capacity within our hospitals and reform the link between hospitals and social care, or this will get worse. We will see, this will become normal. History will not judge our politicians kindly if they try to normalise this very abnormal situation.
Why did you think you're coming out?
Siva Anandasiva.
I think the standard of A&E care in England is in about as deep a hole as I've seen in the last 20 years. So whatever government comes in, they have a huge task to recover performance. And I know it's going to take an awful lot of money, billions of pounds. It's going to take an awful lot more staff and an awful lot of focus. And even then, you're really going to be out of push.
No, we've got a lady. Help, please.
However bad you think it is, however bad the stats are, it's worse. You know, you've got people dying in A&E departments in England in 2024 that don't need to be dying. And so absolutely it's a warning to whatever government inherits the NHS next.
NHS England told us, what's been observed in Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital NHS Trust in recent weeks is not commonplace in A&Es across the country and is not acceptable. The NHS will continue to work closely with the most challenged trusts. Shropshire and Telford Hospital Trust told us, as with other hospitals, our trust is facing significant challenges with urgent and emergency care. We're very sorry that our patients have experienced anything less than the quality care we strive for. While we dispute some of the claims made, we will fully investigate. We encourage anyone with concerns to contact our patient advice and liaison team. The Care Quality Commission told us, we take all concerns raised seriously. We're reviewing the information shared by dispatches and will be following up appropriately.